Haymaker Coffee Company was established in 2021 to create the best coffee to fuel the underdogs who perseveres, who hustles, and have the give-it-all mentality to achieve their American dream. Haymaker Coffee only roasts top quality, specialty-grade coffee beans, resulting in brews that satisfies those who demand every drop from their coffee and day. If you work hard, run hard, fight hard, and play hard, we have your coffee right here.
And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Monday. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. Happy New Year to everyone, our first show of 2023. We've got a great lineup coming at you this week. One of the top teachers in the game going to be joining me here momentarily, Chris Como, the coach to Bryson DeChambeau. Jason Day, I'm seeing some changes from Jason Day. Siwoo Kim, started with him at the middle of last season, and some other players. We're going to be breaking down some of those swings. I want to get into the mind of Chris Como and some of the things that they're doing there. I'm also going to talk to Chris about what we're seeing with Tiger Woods. You may recall Chris helped Tiger back in 2020 get back on track with his swing. I want to talk about what I saw from Tiger in December at the PNC Championship. There we played with Charlie. I like what I see with the swing, and I want to get Chris Como's thoughts on that as well. This is going to be our biggest season yet. Thank you to everyone for last year for subscribing to the podcast. Of course, you can get it on audio. You can also get it on video. We're going to be doing a lot more video with the podcast. Audience seems to like, and particularly when we have an instructor on, so I can get into the About Golf simulator, which is right behind me, glowing better than ever, and get in there and demonstrate some of the things that we're talking about. So I'm really excited about the instruction aspect of the podcast. Usually that's on a Thursday. We've got John Tillery joining us on Thursday. Really excited to talk to John. Of course, he works with Kevin Kisner and some other players. Most recently, he was working with Ricky Fowler, who left to go back to Butch Harmon. I want to talk to John about that experience, what he learned as a coach with Ricky Fowler, and then, of course, some of the players that he has right now heading into next season. John, always an interesting conversation. So he's going to be on Thursday. Now, as you know, Mondays is usually dedicated to recapping and reacting to what we saw the previous week in professional golf, and particularly on the PGA Tour. And we'll get into that starting next Monday. Of course, no tournament last week. It's probably the first week in, what, 50 weeks that we haven't had a tournament on the PGA Tour. So a special one here today with Chris Como. Now, tomorrow, Tuesdays, that's dedicated to looking ahead. We have Kapalua coming up, the Century Tournament of Champions, the first event on the PGA Tour, Field of 40. We'll be breaking that down. Ryan Noonan, one of my favorite guests, handicapper, super good at looking ahead and giving you some win tickets, top 20, et cetera. He'll be back. We'll be doing that on Tuesdays, looking ahead. And then Froggy, he's back on Wednesdays, and we'll be talking to Sepp Straka, who is in the field in Hawaii. Looking forward to catching up with Sepp. And you know who Sepp's coach is? John Tillery, who joins us on Thursday. So we'll pair that together nicely for you. So this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited about this year. Thank you for being here. Do me a favor, subscribe, leave us a ranking, leave us a comment. We are the only consistent podcast 3-4 days a week covering a wide net. We've got you covered right here, Stripe Show Podcast. So without further ado, let's bring in our first guest, one of the top teachers in the game, Chris Como.
Glenn Fittich, the world's most awarded single malt scotch whiskey, is expertly crafted and made with extraordinary care. Each single malt is a work of perfection.
And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Monday. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. Happy New Year to everyone out there. I hope you are off to a great start with 2023. Of course, this is the first episode of the new year right back here on the Stripe Show podcast, as we have got a full lineup once again for you this week. Chris Como will be joining us here momentarily, one of the top teachers in the game. And of course, on Mondays, usually we look back at the tournament that was in professional golf. No tournament last week, so a special one here today with Chris Cuomo, who will be joining me momentarily. Hopefully, you know, you got to see the ball drop. What a terrific weekend of college football. My goodness, the semifinals games were absolutely outstanding. TCU and Michigan, of course, the Horned Frogs out-duel Michigan, and then Georgia, Ohio State. What a terrific ball game that was. I don't know if you saw it, but right when that guy missed the field goal, and that was a bit of a inside-out toe hook, and for those that have hit that toe hook before with the driver off the tee, you can certainly relate to that kicker, but that was left and going left, low left, never a good feeling. But as soon as he hit that and the ball went wide left, of course, the ball hit, the fireworks are up. There's fireworks going off in my community. And of course, living here in Northeast Florida, we might as well be in Georgia. Tons of Georgia Bulldogs fans. You could hear people yelling outside. It was quite the night. And congratulations to the Georgia Bulldogs as they go for back-to-back titles. But TCU's stubborn now, you know, minus 13 for Georgia. I know the overwhelming favorite, but TCU is stubborn. I like that quarterback, Duggan. He is a competitor, and they got a great wide receiver. I think they're better up front than what most people think. So we'll have to see what transpires there a week from today out in California. I am so excited for 2023. We have got so many good things planned. I am in my studio, so we're going to get a full season of this. You can see the About Golf Simulator here behind me. Thank you to them. Huge sponsor of Travis Fulton Golf and the Stripe Show podcast. A lot of you, a lot of good free feedback that we were doing in the fourth quarter of last year using the simulator when we have an instructor on so we can, you know, bring some of these techniques to life. I like to demonstrate it as we're having the conversation with the teacher. We're going to be doing that today with Chris. Chris, of course, works with Bryson DeChambeau. I want to catch up with him on that. I want to catch up with him on Jason Day. I'm seeing some really good iron play from Jason Day. Late in the season last year, I saw some video that Chris posted. I want to talk to him about the changes, noticeable changes, that I'm seeing with Jason Day. He also works with Siwoo Kim, which many don't know that. Siwoo, they started at the middle of last season. I want to talk to him about Siwoo Kim's game and then also get Chris's thoughts on Tiger. I really like the way Tiger swing. I really like what I saw in December at the PNC Championship. Now, you remember Chris worked with Tiger back in 2020, and he helped him get back on track. And Chris and I exchanged a lot of texts and phone calls when I was at Golf Channel at the time. And we really talked through some of the things that they were working on and kind of getting back to some of the things that Tiger used to do. So I want to recall that conversation. I think you'll really enjoy that at the end of the podcast here today. Now, of course, tomorrow we're going to look ahead. Century Tournament of Champions, the first event on the PGA Tour. I've got Ryan Noonan. He's back. One of my favorite handicappers. We'll be looking at the field of 40. We'll be giving you our best bets, win tickets, top 20s, top 40s, maybe some head-to-head this year. I had a really good season 2 years ago in the head-to-heads. I got away from it last year. I think I'm going to get back into that once again this year. So Tuesday's dedicated once again this year to looking ahead, handicapping the tournament coming up, Century Tournament of Champions at Kapalua. And then on Wednesdays, we bring back Froggy Wednesdays, and he has got a full lineup of tour players. Really excited about Wednesdays. Got some surprises there for you this year. Sepp Strack is going to join us. He will be in Kapalua. Sepp had a great season last year. I got to spend some time with Sepp in Hilton Head, walking around the golf course with him doing a piece for The Cut, which is on Golf Channel. I'll be doing that again this year. Super excited about that. I'll be at the American Express in Palm Springs in a couple weeks. But walking around with Sepp, that was good. That was a lot of good fun. And then, of course, John Tillery, who works with Sepp Straka, he will be joining me on Thursday. So without further ado, I see the man of the hour. He's popped up. Let's bring him in. The top teachers in the game, Chris Cuomo. What's up, buddy?
Travis, how are you?
I'm good, man. What are you up to?
Just about to go to work for a little bit. Had a busy morning, just catching up with some stuff, but about to go to the golf course after this.
Yeah, Happy New Year too. Did you watch the ball drop, or did you get a little more sleep in?
I was in bed early and I got up for sunrise actually on the beach. So I've been in West Palm Beach for the last few months, just through the winter or whatever. And I rode my bike in the dark to the beach and was there for a dawn and sunrise. So it was actually kind of nice. Nice way to start the year.
You know, I'm up here in Ponte Vedra, as you know. I told everybody, you know, I mean, we might as well be in Georgia, right? We're like, we're right on the Florida-Georgia border. There's tons of Georgia Bulldog fans here. And when that guy hit that big old toe hook, the kick, you know, over there to the left and missed it, it was right at midnight. The fireworks are going off. You could hear people screaming out, seriously, like out in the, you know, they were so excited that Georgia won. Mm. And but the timing of it was like perfect. You know, it was the kid kicks it to win the game and he misses it, right? And as soon as that ball lands, 12 o'clock.
That's wild.
It was insane, right? So the fireworks are going off for New Year's. All these fans are screaming. I mean, it was nuts. So anyway, I stayed awake, but man, I'm 45 now, and it's getting more difficult every single year. Well, I appreciate you joining me, man. You know, we're doing well here in the pod. You've been a big part of this. You've been on a couple times in the past, and you can see I've got the simulator in the back here, and we're gonna, you know, one of the things I like to do here. Is kind of demonstrate some of the things. We'll pull up some of your students here in a minute, but I've got to start, man, with, I'm always curious. You're down in West Palm. It's the off season, which is like 2 months anymore, 2 weeks anymore for some of these top players, because they play, it seems like, every week or every other week. There's 48 tournaments on the PGA Tour this year, 48 tournaments on the PGA Tour. Take my audience through, Chris, the off season. You know, you're down in West Palm. I know you work with a lot of players, which we'll get to here in a second, but what's the off season about for you as a coach when you're able to spend maybe 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month or longer with some, and it's like, hey man, I know we kind of put this off in the summer. We talked about it and we'll work on it in the off season. Take my audience what an off season is like working with a PGA Tour player.
Yeah. Just, I think like any other kind of coaching student, whatever you want to call it, client relationship, it's very different for each person. You know, Bryson, for example, he had a crazy year beginning of the year with PGA Tour, then with LIV and just traveling all over the world. A lot of his off season was just relaxing, recovering, taking care of health, you know, just his health in general. So it was much more focused on that kind of recovery phase, a very sort of conscious form of recovery, just some of the stuff he did in the offseason. A guy like Jason Day, where he's making some swing changes, you know, there's only so much you really want to do mid-season when it comes to swing changes. And he's done a great job playing and making changes. And he had like a nice fall, played pretty well in the fall. So he's done great with the changes over the last year or whatever it is. But then the offseason kind of really hit things extra hard when it came to the swing. And he's just really enjoyed that. He's been at home a lot. He came to Florida for a week, which was great. And then he's done a lot of work in Ohio. He's got like a simulator at his house and a range that he'll go to. But it's just been an environment that's given him you know, some downtime with the family, but a lot of time to also work on the game without worrying about having to compete the next week.
All right, let's get right into it. Here he is. Because you posted this swing in your story. And I sent you a DM right afterwards. I was like, all right, that looks a lot different for Jason Day. And I'll start with what I see, okay? And then you can enlighten us on what the hell is actually happening here, right? So first thing, and you and I have texted before on this, and I looked at Jason. In fact, we talked about him last time you're on the pod, this little more change in efflux. You can see that little window opening up, you know, between Jason's knees and the backswing. There's a little more of this change of knee flex going back. I'll play it again here. And for my audience, I talk a lot about this where it's, you take it back and you can see that right hip drawn back, a little deeper turn. If I pause it right, well, just missed it. But you can see there's a little space, right? A little window in there between the knees. That's very different for Jason, who historically kind of kept the right knee very flexed, right? And now I see that right knee giving way a little bit. The second thing I see, Chris, is I see the shaft coming down. I see this club shaft right there, much more on the right forearm. That shaft before, historically, that shaft before was in between his forearms on a steeper plant angle. That shaft now to me looks shallower, more in the right form. Evaluate my assessment of those two things, the change of knee flex, the shallower shaft plane coming down with Jason Day. Mm-hmm.
Definitely the knee flex is changing a bit. We didn't really ever hit it through trying to change the knee flex. So I think that his body motion has been the sort of the primary focus for the last, let's call it a year plus, a little over a year. Because if we were to have like a hierarchy of sort of, you know, what he needs to do well for the overall kind of bigger game plan, is he's got to move in a way that doesn't hurt his body, right? So that his back isn't in pain. And, you know, to ensure that, or to kind of prioritize that, we focus mostly on his body motion, which was a little bit of a bigger hip turn and just sort of a different shape to the way he's working his spine and his pelvis and everything, both in the backswing and the downswing. So that's changed pretty dramatically over the last year plus. And then the off season, it's been a lot of, okay, with this newish body motion, how do you do things slightly different through the ball in terms of his release pattern, as well as, you know, some of the stuff you mentioned with the shaft shallowing. Now, you know, in my opinion, the whole shaft shallowing thing is kind of this, you know, trendy in vogue thing in golf instruction. And there's been a lot of great players who don't shallow it a bunch, who hit it awesome. So in so many ways, I don't think shallowing the shaft is really that important of a thing. But I do think for certain players and certain shot shapes they may want to hit and certain release patterns, yeah, it can be kind of a good thing as long as you do it, air quotes, like the proper ways. And then there's a lot of like bad ways to shallow it as well. So this is where having the off season to kind of really get into it, and then also have enough, you know, wiggle room that if he were to, let's say, start to shallow it in it, what I would say is a bad version, you know, we have time to kind of back out of it, understand why it got a little off, things like that. And that actually happened for a few days where he started to get the club on a shallower plane. And I was like, man, I feel like that's not the way you're going to really, you know, hit it your best doing it this way. And because it's the off season, and again, he doesn't have to play in a tournament tomorrow, it gave us that opportunity to really get into it and understand why it got a little off. And you know, what we would maybe see from different shots if it got in this direction, and have a little bit of a game plan, hopefully, to get ahead of that. And then when he starts to play, if he gets into that tendency again, have some strategies to help him work out of it while he's, you know, in the middle of competing.
Now, is that side bend, Chris? Is that like, is he taking on too much side bend to the right when he's trying to shallow it? Or what is that incorrect way?
Yeah, it's partially side bend. It's partially getting his right arm too tucked under his left. You know, I would actually say getting too much external rotation in his trail arm. You know, things that I think can potentially create the feeling of being stuck, or the club, air quotes, behind you. You know, there's a lot of stuff where you've heard players talk about getting the club behind them, and then people will come back and say, well, you know, everybody's got their arms or the club somewhat behind their pivot, you know, and if someone's open at impact, that's true. But the feeling of the club behind you, the feeling of it, is a very real thing for better players. Mm-hmm. And there's something in that. So to throw the baby out the bathwater and be like, no, you're not getting the club behind you, I think it's just kind of missing something. So there's something in that feeling and that experience of when people feel the club stuck or behind them. And, you know, that's where for a better player, it's like, how do you, if you think getting the club more shallow is part of the plan you want, how do you get it shallow, but also prevent it from getting, air quotes, stuck or behind you?
All right. So let me get up here for a minute. Because you said this to me last time. You said that you're not getting the change of knee flex directly from the knees, right? You're getting it more through how the pelvis is moving. So is the pelvis, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to misquote you here, but are you trying to get the pelvis to go kind of deeper into the right heel and kind of climb a little bit, where its orientation is maybe the right side's a little higher than the left, versus where Jason historically, keeping the flex in his knee, his pelvis would have been, let's call it, more level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it definitely has that sort of pitch to it where it feels like it climbs and it's kind of more back and you know, deeper. But I would also say that it doesn't necessarily have to go to the heel. There's plenty of guys who have that look in their pelvis. and the pressure doesn't actually go to
the heel.
Yeah. And here's the thing too, right? Because it's like, you know, there's another thing of like, sometimes people talk about trying to straighten their right leg. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great players, again, who've talked about resisting the right leg, trying to keep the right leg flexed. And, you know, again, a lot of instructions like, oh, no. See, you're not flexing your right leg. It's straightening. Gotcha. It's like, okay, well, that's what the guy's feeling. So you can't throw that experience out with the bat, you know, throw it out. You got to understand that there might be something that feeling that might be an insight to what muscles are firing. You know, someone can try to keep the right leg, the right knee flexed, but because their pelvis is moving it deeper and more, it could pull it straight, but they might still be activating the muscles to keep the right leg flexed. And in their mind and their experience, they're feeling like they're flexing their right knee. So I've had plenty of people who have actually had the sort of the feeling of some tension of keeping that right leg flexed, but because their pelvis is moving deeper, the leg actually straightens. And that's a very, even though on camera, it may look very similar to someone who's trying to straighten it.
Yeah.
The muscles that are firing and how they're firing are very different. And this is where I think, you know, oftentimes, you know, the devil is in the details of things like that.
Yeah. I think it's a really good point, because I can, and this is something that I've certainly have experimented with my students in teaching, when they feel that pelvis moving and that right hip climbing for the first time, like they've never even really felt that before, never even thought about it. And when they feel that, you know, kind of moving back, like you can see my knee's got to give some, you know, as I keep climbing that, my knee's got to give up a little flexion in order to do that. And when I look at Jason in that window, and I'm talking about this little space, you can see like you set a little window in between my knees. I mean, you go back to years and years of Jason hitting balls and you're just not going to see that. Like you're going to see those knee, that right knee very flexed, some resistance, you know, almost that I talk about a lot in podcasts, that era of turn the upper, not the lower resistance. And you can see Jason's gotten out of that. And a lot of it in listening to you talk is from relieving some pressure and what's better on the back. And I want to ask you this about Jason before we go to Siwoo, because I've got some questions about Siwoo Kim too. You know, like even go back to like 2015, 2016. And you weren't working with Jason at the time. He was working with Colin Swatton. And, you know, Colin is like a father figure to him and was his coach and caddy and all that. And during that time, Jason was, I think he won 7 times in 2015 to 2016. And this dude was the dog. I mean, he was like, you get him in the hunt and he'd put you away. Number one player in the world. Won the PGA, of course. Won the Players. But he still wasn't like this consistent, great iron player. You know, like he had his moments, like he had some moments, but he wasn't a dominant iron player, you know, month in, month out, like we saw with Tiger, you know, like we saw, I think, like we see with a lot of the best players in today's game, like strokes gained approach, we know has a lot of value. And you look at Jason, even then he had his moments, but he would still kind of come off of that a little bit. His iron game wasn't like elite consistently, but he was great around the greens. He was a great putter and he was a better than average driver of the ball. Now I look at him now, Chris, I'm looking at him statistically at the end of last year. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Strokes gained approach. Shriners plus 5.4. CJ Cup plus 4.1. Worldwide Technology. We didn't get that stat there, but he finished 21st. Houston Open plus 3.1, finished 16th. Okay. Strokes gained approach. A run of 4 tournaments at the end of last year, something's working here, right? I mean, something's clicking. Like you got to feel pretty good about Jay Day going into next year. If his approach game is that good, Jason Day is going to win again. I mean, like, he's going to win again.
I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah, I definitely think he's going to win again. I mean, here's the thing, right? It's like, He was the number one player in the world. I mean, the run he had with Colin was like unbelievable, right? So, you know, his iron play was pretty darn good back then.
It was. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I mean,
he was the number one player in the world, and to win that amount of times, you just can't without having great iron play.
Yeah.
So like they set the bar really high for the potential of his game. Now, obviously we're trying to get there again. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is it's, you know, he's in his 30s now. He loves the game. He loves competing. I mean, this guy loves competing and playing golf. And he loves working on his game. he wants more years out of it. And yeah. and that was the priority of everything. It's like, how can we dig in there with his, he's got a great team. Kevin Duffy is his trainer. He's worked with all sorts of Jason Goldsmith with it, like a lot of mental stuff. I mean, he does a lot of great things with his body and his mind. And it's like, how does he have another great run of hopefully 10 plus years to play at a high level? Now, that little trend over the fall with his strokes gained, like approach getting much better, that was really fun and promising to watch.
Yeah.
It feels like it's a stat that's saying, hey, look, we're, you know, kind of on the right direction with both keeping his body healthy and hitting it well, as well as obviously a big part of it. So it was nice to see. He's obviously already created the precedent of being able to play unbelievable golf. So we know it's in there now. It's, you know, can we sort of crack the code for him to do in a way that, you know, at this phase in his life will give him, you know, hopefully a lot more years.
All right, let's move on to this dude. This guy, man, Siwoo Kim. You started with him at the middle of last year. Is that right? You started with him?
Probably earlier last year. It was kind of, you know, I'm really like, you know, part of it for me, it's, I'm kind of all over the place. I want to make sure I can give people enough time. And, you know, we worked a bit last year here and there. And, you know, it felt like it was, we had a good sort of vibe throughout the year. So, you know, I think we're going to try and do a little bit more this year.
What's going on with this swing here? I look at Siwoo. You know, there's always a couple things with Siwoo that first off, his tempo is so good. And you look at the top of the swing, and I mean, there's a lot there you can't really pick that apart too much. There's very clean position, like a little window under the knees, arm structure, wrists, all of those things. And then if I bring it back up here, you know, even the exit plan, like I've always loved the way the club kind of turns the corner with Siwoo, and the club kind of gets back underneath that left shoulder. You can see a little bit of the club face. I mean, it's always been a swing to me. It's like, damn, like it's clean, you know, a lot of clean stuff there. So he comes to you and he's like, man, I can't do this. I can't what's he want help with to get his game where he feels like maybe it's holding back, which his last win, of course, was the American Express, which is just in a couple weeks after they come back from Hawaii. So what's the focus with Siwoo? What part of the game are you guys getting after?
Well, so Siwoo is a really good ball striker. He doesn't have any crazy injuries. There's just nothing like going on with a guy like, you know, say Jason, where it's like, okay, my back's been bothering me for many years, yada, yada, yada. Or a guy like Bryson, who's always like, you know, looking at things and asking questions and trying to figure things out, and, you know, went down the path of trying to get a ton of distance. There's nothing like that going on. So, you know, I've worked with Emiliano Grillo for quite a few years, but it's like, it's been a very kind of like just here and there type of thing.
Yeah.
Because Emiliano is a great, great ball striker, and he got into a funk and was basically like, all right, let's look at a bunch of swings of yours when you've hit it your best and try to get you back to that space. And, you know, as soon as he got there, it's like, just do your thing, man. You hit it awesome. Siwoo, he's a great ball striker. So for me, it's really been a lot about understanding when he's hitting it his best, like what is his personal sweet spot, and then trying to help him stay in there more often than not. You know, when we first started working, the club was a lot more laid off than when he had, you know, been playing sort of his best golf and was a little bit more over it. So he likes to fade it, but it was just getting a little bit too kind of cutty for him. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was bringing it back to sort of a little bit more neutral, but making sure he doesn't overdo it, where now he's, you know, two into out and starting to hit draws and getting away from his stock fade shot. So that's been a lot of the work that we've done so far. You know, now going forward, it's going to be really me kind of digging into his game and be like, where can you find some edges? You know, just to score better. Cause again, his ball striking is pretty good when it's good. So it's understanding how to keep him in his own personal sweet spot, swing wise and ball striking wise. And then where are some edges you can find in your game overall?
I know one.
Yeah.
It's the one that's like 35 inches long, the flat stick.
Yeah.
That's the one that holds him back. Right. Yeah. I mean, the putter statistically, is, you know, last year, let's see, 21, 22 strokes gained putting 177th so far into this season, 183rd.
Yeah.
Right. So the flat stick obviously is his greatest opportunity, but, you know, strokes gained tee to green, like you said, he's pretty clean. I mean, you know, 20, 20, 21, 22, he was 38th. And so far this year, he's 21st. So that's pretty elite stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, maybe explore a little bit more speed, but in a much different way than a guy like Bryson, where Bryson was like, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to change my body. I'm going to change my golf swing, whatever. So it would never be something like that dramatic, just kind of more subtle ways. So a guy like Siwoo, the work is going to be a lot more subtle. It wouldn't be like a Jason Day where it's like, okay, his swing looked like this 4 years ago. Now it looks way different. Or a guy like Bryson where his body transformed, his swing is different. He's now picked up, you know, whatever amount of yards. It'll be things that are much smaller, much more small edge type strategies, trying to find small edges. So just a very different style of coaching, I would say.
So before, club was a little over there, a little too much laid off, pointing left, and now it's a little more over there.
Mm-hmm.
So was that a little more like elbow wrist, or what was the trick to getting it over there? And I would imagine when that shaft, as you talk distance, when you get a little laid off, you're talking distance, that's not ideal, right? Getting that shaft laid off, because then that swing, that turn can get a little short. I mean, it's funny when you just get up there, and if I just point the club more right, my left shoulder wants to come across more, mm-hmm. you know, versus if it's laid off, I can get a little shorter with my turn. How did you get that club pointing more down the line?
I kind of just told him, get it more down the line.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yes. No, I mean, yes. I'm kidding.
Yes. So, see, it can be that simple.
No.
I thought you were going to say, no, I hooked him up in 3D and here's what we do.
I mean, yeah, it was a little bit of just how he was working his forms and just trying to create some feels. And I mean, so much of it, again, with a better player, it's like, it's easy to be like, okay, get it there. But then how do they react to it? How do you give them things to, when they react to that new club position, can still get the club coming down from, you know, the plane or the path that they hit their shots from. So, you know, you get the club a little bit more across, and it's very easy to go from there to start to get two underneath and start to draw it. And this guy is going to always want to fade it. Mm-hmm. So it's just about kind of, you know, managing what other things almost without fail will change when you make one change. You know, none of these changes are ever sort of an isolation. You do one thing and then a bunch of other stuff tends to come into play. And then how do you manage those things?
And he likes to fade it, right? You were saying he likes to just kind of the ball just die a little right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, like that club pointing left, because you work with Jamie Lovemark as well, who that club can get pointing a little left at the top, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of always been there, hasn't it? Like he's mm-hmm. always kind of had it over there. So mm-hmm. you've elected to leave that alone through that journey and just kind of keep. And he doesn't, you know, Jamie doesn't really pull down on it, because sometimes you can see that shaft when it does lay off, like sometimes then it wants to get a little steep in transition, but Jamie doesn't do that in transition. Like, how do you have that conversation when you're looking at that and you're like, yeah, it's a little over there, but you know, he wants to do this and the matchups, and then see, ooh, it's a little over there, but I think I'm going to change it on this one. How do you have that dialogue in your head?
Well, a guy like Siwoo, for example, he was laid off and then the club, you know, steepened pretty early. And then from there, it was either he's going to really cut it or kind of almost work underneath it late. And just, you know, neither ball flight was really what he wanted to have. With Jamie, you know, he lays it off and it can probably get a little out of control, and there is sort of some management of that. But in general, it transitions pretty shallow. And for him, it's always, how do you get the club steeper through the ball? Like his fault is to have it be too shallow late. And, you know, he's always trying to get the club more on top through the ball. You know, if he gets the club too across the line, then it just gets way underneath late. So it's sort of like, okay, you know, it doesn't react well from sort of a two down the line spot for him. Although I do think he can get too laid off, and we're trying to manage that. But if he gets it like online, it actually oftentimes ends up working down in a way that just is that super underneath late.
See, that's interesting. Like that's really good insight on, and just let me recap that for the audience here, for those watching, so if when you look at Lovemark and the club's over there, right. And then that shaft kind of stays like that, almost like a John Rahm, just stays there where you look at a Ricky Fowler, he'll get it over there. And then even sounds like with Siwoo, he would get it over there. And then in transition, you would kind of see a little bit of that. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you can see the shaft kind of want to go there. And then they kind of sense that, right? If they're trying to cut it, they can wipe it a little bit So what they do is that they'll go here and then they'll kind of back it up, stand the handle out a little bit to try to offset that sump, right? So it kind of all depends on A, the shot they're trying to hit, but B, what their engine coming through is used to doing and trying to match those things up so they can hit the shot that they want to hit. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And I think it's also not, it's the shot they want to hit, but also going back to that, again, this is where I think a lot of instructors will sort of hammer this idea, but to me it's separate the actually, you know, what's happening and the feeling of it. And then what that feeling may mean in terms of the physical kind of what's happening in the swing. But people will talk about getting the club in front of them. So a guy like Ricky, to me, it's like, yeah, there's times when maybe he's steeping it, you know, I don't know, too much or whatever, but I saw a recent swing of his, you know, I think he's working with Butch again right now.
Yeah.
Looks great. Like, to me, it's like, it's in a nice spot, but then all the way down, it doesn't shallow too much, but through the ball, it's like out, it's in front of him.
Yeah.
So when I say in front of him, I just mean, it's not shallowing too late. So it's like, yes, it's behind, his arms are behind his rotation. The club is, you know, everything's sort of behind his rotation in a sense. But that feeling of the club coming back out on top of him, I mean, I don't know Ricky's feelings, but it has that look. To me, it looks great through the ball. And that's a look oftentimes I hear a player describe as feeling, you know, again, air quotes, in front of them.
Mm. Yeah. The whole Ricky changes here, you know, and this whole journey that he went on for a couple years. And I've got John Tiller coming on Thursday. I'm friends with John, and him and I, we've had just very candid conversations and open conversations about what they were working on and why. And, you know, Ricky went down a pretty, at least in my mind, a pretty in-depth change, wholesale changes of not only kind of the pivot and, but the club. You know, here's a guy that had the shaft pointing left and then a little steep in transition his whole life. And then, you know, there you could see the effort to try to get it more down the line or maybe point a little more right. And then what that meant, the shaft would then want to pitch back a little bit more. But it always looked like it was still a little laid off. It just always looked like he was kind of in between, you know, it's still a little laid off. And then, of course, he goes to Butch, the first video he pushes, shit, the thing's right down the line. It's like, come on, can't be that easy. I mean, sometimes you just want to look at a player and just like, come on, man, just point the club more this way, would you? I mean, throw me a bone, really. You know, like, we've been working on this for how long now? And you still got the club pointing effing way over there. Point the guy, you know what I'm saying? Like, every once in a while, you just want to like, come on, make the change. We exaggerate it. Ever get to that point?
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's so interesting, right? So Tillery's like an amazing teacher. You know, I've known him out on tour for a long time. And, you know, obviously Butch is like, you know, kind of the goat of instruction. And it's so interesting, right? Because like a player, it's like they're always, it's always kind of everybody involved, right? So like the work that he did with Tillery is going to be part of however he shows up next year, even though like him and Butch are not doing stuff, there's stuff that him and Tillery worked on that's going to have, you know, an influence on him for the rest of his life to a certain extent, right? So it's like, I mean, who knows, right? It's like they're, you know, they're working on one thing, keep going. And then Butch comes along and it might be great, great stuff, right? And there's times when Fowler played really well when he was working with Tillery. So it always felt like it was close. And then Butch comes along and he's going to have his, you know, magic, which he's shown to have over and over again. And Ricky might go on a great heater and because of the work they're doing. But I think it'd also be wrong to somehow not think that the work he did with Tillery didn't have, you know, some percentage of a point at play in it all. You know, this is how I feel with a guy like, you know, Jason or Bryson, right? Jason had Colin for many years, you know, Bryson with Mike Shy. You know, the work that both of those guys have done with those previous coaches are still a huge part of what they're doing right now. So, you know, to me, it's like the window a player is with like a particular coach, they're still expressing the things they've done with all their previous coaches at some capacity.
All right. Speaking of Bryson, here we go. Right. And long drive back late summer here. Pretty well. I finished seventh. And, you know, I've been kind of reading up, following Bryson, of course, as we all do. He's such a polarizing figure. He's interesting. And when I look at Bryson, he was talking about some of the things that he's been focusing on over the last couple of months. And of course, he went to LIV, and you look at his finishes last year, 10th, T31, T17th, 8th, 4th, and T21. So he bulked up, right? And now we're taking it off, right? So now it's like 25, 30 pounds leaner. I heard him talk about the whole 30 diet, but he's still pretty cut. Not a lot of body fat there. I mean, he looks great. I see a lot of driver swings. The speed is up. Give us an update on Bryson heading into this season.
Yeah, I mean, last year was crazy, right? Like the shift to LIV and all that. And I don't know. I mean, he's in a great spot. I mean, he's been eating really healthy. He's definitely leaned out. He posted a picture on Instagram a while back where he was like shirtless and flexing. He's like he's jacked, right? I mean, so yeah. he's in great overall health. He had, you know, obviously his hand surgery that he had some, you know, recovery time with. Came in second in the World Long Drive Championship this year. I think has a renewed kind of focus and intention of, he still wants to hit it really far, but a renewed sort of focus on how do I really control my golf ball? You know, Bryson just has this energy where he gets into something, he gets something in his mind, and he's just like a bulldog. He's just hyper focused on that. And, you know, for him, really exploring how to create maximum distance was a big focus of his. I would say before he won the US Open, it was a big focus, but there's still that balance between that and controlling your golf ball. And then after he won the US Open, it kind of shifted to how fast can I swing a golf club? You know, he's obviously still trying to compete. So I don't want to say, you know, like he didn't think about like competitive golf and how to control it, but just swinging it faster was like the thing that he was like super, just got him really jazzed up, right? And he's still in that space, but he's got this renewed energy of, okay, how do I be one of the best ball sharkers, control the best, control the ball as well as anybody that's out there right now?
Yeah, it's interesting because like I've had some people on the pod and like we talk about Bryson a lot. And you know, one of the narratives that you hear a lot, and I want to get your thoughts on this, is Bryson has become more consumed about ball speed and his body and all these things, and has neglected about maybe how complete of a player he could be, right? And just like maybe focusing so much on this aspect of his game over the years. And it sounds like maybe he's coming back to now controlling, let's control the ball. Let's become a better iron player. Let's become a better short game player, right? And so this obsession with his body and speed, he's more focused on how fast he can hit it versus about how complete of a player he can be. What do you say to that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he ever didn't care about being a complete player. I mean, he's still hyper competitive and trying to win every tournament he plays in. He's very driven by learning, understanding his own game, his own swing in general. I feel like these things have their own kind of cycles and waves. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to remember, right? Like these are human beings we're dealing with. It's not just a person who their whole thing in life is just, you know, competitive golf. It's also how does the golf bring a certain level of enjoyment and interest and you know, inspiration, all that to them. And, you know, I think these things have their cycles. And for him, seeing what is the upper limit of him being able to swing a golf club as fast as he could grabbed him for a window. It was a rabbit hole that he felt very inspired to go down, and he did pretty darn good with it. I mean, he did come, you know, again, he came in second in the World Long Drive Championship. That's remarkable. Now, for someone like me, you know, the deals I do with my players is based off their performance, not in the Long Drive Championship, but like in competitive golf. So I have my own sort of interest and bias in terms of like the way I run my business.
You're like, hey, wait a minute. Go grab that sandwich. But go look grab that sandwich, cut it down 2 inches, and let's go over to the green, hit some chips and putts. Chips and pitches. Come on.
But you know, at the end of the day, it's like, again, there are people first. So it's like you have to honor and respect their own kind of inspiration at whatever that is for them at that point in their life. while still planting seeds of, well, what about this? What about that? So, you know, and again, these things go in cycles. So I feel as though he's got this renewed, okay, how do I really understand how do I really control this golf ball well and then compete at the highest level? So it'll be interesting to see how this year goes. Point is, take home of it all is he's in a really good place, both with his body, his health, and his golf game in general.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? Because like you got to be great at something, right? To be out there on the you got to be really good at all of it. I mean, this is the 0.001%. But to be on the PGA Tour, man, you got to be great at something. And distance is a pretty damn good thing to be great at, right? You can't argue that in the modern era. And I always kind of joke, and you know, Bryce and I, we've had some DMs back and forth, and this and that, and I respect Bryson and his work ethic and all that. And I've always been like, man, like, hey, I want to see you post something with some finesse shots around the green, like the complete player. I want to see the distance with now the focus on improving that weakness around the greens. He's already one of the best putters on the planet, right? We know he's one of the longest on the planet, if not the longest. And it's like, man, he gets that little approach wedge game and finesse down around the green. Like, how good could this guy be? You know, like, how good could he be? And selfishly, I'd love to see it stacked up against the history of the PGA Tour, but that's for another conversation, right? That's another conversation of the live now, which is here to stay with the PGA Tour. Do you think, take your relationship away from Bryson and some of the other players you know out there, do you think that the newness of it is going to wear off eventually? Like, they've went to live, they're going to see these guys playing on the West Coast and this and that. I mean, at some point it's like, man, I miss that out there. You think ever going to get to that point? I know they got all the money in the world, this and that, but is the competition of the PGA Tour playing in the deepest fields that ever going to get to that point in the legacy and the history of how many wins you can have on that circuit stacked up against the Jason Days and, you know, the Tom Watsons, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, a couple different questions there, right? So I think in terms of the legacy, like, the PGA Tour is going to always have their legacy, right? So I don't think you're ever replacing that. Depending on how LIV evolves and progresses over time in terms of the people that come over and just kind of like whatever its own arc is going to be, it'll potentially create its own legacy at some point. Yeah. And I think that would be the idea, right? It wouldn't take away from the PGA Tour, but it'll be a different type of legacy, potentially. We'll see what happens, right? Yep. I think we're all kind of waiting for that. And then obviously you can separate the legacy of the PGA Tour, which is, it's got its own legacy, but then the legacy of the majors, which is almost in a lot of ways a separate legacy. And, you know, hopefully these guys, I'm really a big sort of like, I'm a fan that's hopeful that the majors will allow all the best players in the world to participate in it.
Well, the Masters is, the Open is, I mean, I think the other two will follow. I mean, I think they're going to play in the majors, all four.
I hope so. And I hope that the world ranking eventually, from a smell test perspective, because look, the world ranking points, they're sort of somewhat chosen by someone at some point, right? So those can be tweaked or whatever.
Yep.
But, you know, if a guy like Cam Smith has a great year in the majors and he does really well in LIV and he falls to, you know, 10th in the world and he has a year that's, you know, really strong, the smell test is going to be like, that stinks. Right. So if the world ranking does not reflect that, hey, these guys like Cam Smith, Dustin Johnson, et cetera, Bryson are playing at a level, let's say they're playing a level that we know they're capable of and they're falling down the world rankings, there's something that smells off about that.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, what could happen is that people could fall off the world ranking. If they're not in the majors per previous major wins, they don't get in the majors anymore. That would be, you know, to me, it's like the majors. I think there's got to be a way that the best players in the world play in the majors.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see how that all pans out. I'm really happy to see the Masters is letting everybody play in there. In terms of, you know, missing it out on tour. Yeah. I think there is an element of people are going to see some of these great events, you know, RIV, you know, Waste Management, a lot of events that like I've loved throughout the years. I think these players loved, you know, obviously, like I said, RIV Tigers tournament, they'll miss that for sure. But flip it. Let's say you had 3 years go by and these guys are playing these team events and then all of a sudden they're now just playing on the PGA Tour, not playing LIV anymore for whatever reason, they would miss that also. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. At the Miami event, I was there, and the team camaraderie and the cheering for each other was amazing to watch. It was a lot of fun. It was a really fun environment. These guys are still super competitive. We had tons of nights, days, tournaments out last year where Bryson was on the range till like 7 or 8 at night. So, I mean, he's still very, very competitive. You can tell all the guys are. And it's got its own thing to it. We'll see if there's ever a sort of a place where they can land where people can play on both tours. I don't know. But regardless, I do think as long as it's one of those things where you're either on this tour or the other tour, there will always be an element of missing that other tour. And then obviously the guys on the PGA Tour, they haven't experienced LIV, so they're not going to miss it. But if someone was on LIV and then went back to the PGA Tour for whatever reason, I think there would be an element of missing that as well, because the team environment, it's got its own unique structure that I think is fun for the guys and potentially entertaining as well.
And hey, you mentioned it, like percentage of how they do out there on LIV, those purses, limited fields, treating you like royalty, eating caviar, the coaches, you get to stay in these suites. I mean, not a bad gig for you guys out there.
Well, I'll tell you what, you go out to a LIV event and there's a, with the coaches and the people who are supporting the players, there's this feeling and this sort of overall sense of like, hey, you know, you guys are an integral part of helping these professional athletes perform at the highest level. And that's a cool experience. Now, having said that, like I've been out on the PGA Tour for a long time, and that's an incredible experience as well. It's just, everything's just a little bit different, right? So to me, it's, I know, I mean, yeah.
I think you have to have an open mind. Look, I have my feelings and opinions and this and that on it. But look, I'm going to have an open mind. I'm going to watch it. I enjoy watching Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and Bryson play. You know, like I enjoy it. Cam Smith, like I'm not going to not watch them. So
what's your opinion? I don't even know.
I hate the fragmentation of where we're at, right, in professional golf. I don't think it's great for the game long term. So I think in time, you know, can this thing come back together to some degree? I hope so, because I think all the best players playing together over a period of time is a good thing. And I don't like the fragmentation of it. I don't like that I got to go to YouTube to watch this event on LIV Golf. Am I a little uncomfortable with where the money's coming from? Do I feel a little like, you know, what's their motive here behind the tour? What are they really trying to accomplish? Are these the best people to be running professional golf? Yeah, I've got my questions. I've got my concerns. But I also, on the flip side, you know, I don't think 48 PGA Tour events is the right way to go in you know, basically leading with your best players all the time, you know, on the PGA Tour. I do think this elevated series is a good thing. I think it should have happened years ago, and that the PGA Tour got too watered down, too many tournaments, and they needed to push their best players forward. So, you know, I think we all have things that we need to work on, but I have my concerns. I think it'll be interesting to see what the end game is for LIV Golf. They're not making money. They're hemorrhaging money, but they have deep pockets. So what is their in play in this? I think will be, you know, and how they handle that will be an interesting follow. I'm not a huge Greg Norman fan. I don't think he's probably the best commissioner and face for professional golf, but that's just me, you know, and those are just my thoughts on it. But at the same time, it is what it is. And I like watching professional golfers play golf. So I'm going to be open-minded about it. We're going to cover it here on the podcast and kind of see how it shakes out. But I do think, to your point, like the major championships, they have to stay above the fray. Like they've got to stay above the fray and let the best come and play. Because if they don't, to my point, that would be just another slit in professional golf, the fragmentation. And now you can't even get the best players playing the majors, right? So I just don't think it's the best for professional golf long-term. That's just my opinion, but we'll just have to wait to see how it plays out. It's just so new. It's like, it's hard to kind of wrap your, it's kind of hard to wrap your arms around it, Chris. You know, like what's their end goal, LIV Golf? You know, what are they trying to do here? Are they just trying to flex and show power, or are they really invested and want to be a major fourth in professional golf. And I don't think anybody really knows in the first year of it. I think we have to kind of wait to see how that business model plays out and how they handle these players and because players are going to come and go, right? They're going to be some like, oh, we don't need you anymore. You're over there because we found someone else now to replace you. So how do you get back on that? You know, so I think it'll be interesting to see how all that shakes out. But before I let you go, I've got to bring this man up. All right. I know you helped this guy. You know him, Tiger Woods. And his swing, was it back in 19, Chris? 2019, 2020? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Somewhere in there? Yeah. So you and I, when I was working at Golf Channel, I used to text you a lot. And of course, because we were talking about Tiger all the time. And I was like, well, let me just make sure we're articulating this the right way on what we're looking at and what is actually happening. And I can remember some of our conversations as you were putting the pieces back together to help Tiger swing perhaps a little more like he used to. And I see in December when he came out and played in the PNC, I think there was still a lot of those same things in place. When I look at Tiger now and back to our conversations a few years ago, I saw a swing that got back to being a little bit wider. I saw in the backswing, I saw a swing that there was a little bit more of a move into the right side. I saw a swing where he was taller at the top of the swing versus, I think, a period of time, Chris, where the hand path got going in. I think he got hanging left. And I think he started dropping a little bit in the backswing. And we know where that took him. And he was still able to trap it and hit down on it hard and control it with an iron. But with a driver, he had to aim so far left, it was scary. But then when you get back in there, all of a sudden it's wider. He's moving into his right side. He's taller. What do you see? Is that kind of some of the things as you revisit some of the things you used to do with Tiger Woods? You like the way he's swinging it?
Yeah, I think it's look. I mean, I think these look good. I think, you know, the recent ones look pretty good. I mean, obviously his biggest issue right now is just being able to walk, you know, a golf course multiple rounds in a row to compete. Gosh, man, he's a hard guy to count out though.
Yeah.
He seems to always find a way. So I'm, you know, obviously a huge Tiger Woods fan and rooting for him to be able to play this year at the Masters, but, you know, kind of get through it. Right. And play well, hopefully, but yeah, taller, wider, you know, much more released through the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Not kind of trying to hold on to the face. So those are the sort of the big themes that we had, you know, kind of like how you just talked about. It was studying a lot of footage of 2000. And it's like, okay, let's as much as possible, try to take away the things you did then, but in a way that your body can kind of manage now. So we just used sort of that as a rough model. And there's a lot of stuff in terms of the way he worked his arms and his, wrists and just the club in general through the ball. That was a big part of what we worked on. And then, you know, it becomes, what is a backswing shape that would help facilitate what you're trying to do through the ball? So in a lot of ways I look at swings kind of working it sort of backwards. It's like, what do you want a guy to do through the ball in terms of the way the club, his arms, wrists, his body, et cetera, are working. And then what are backswings and transitions that can help them reach that end game that you guys have defined that you're going after?
Yeah, it's interesting with Tiger. It always feels like, man, he kind of gets, you know, he gets kind of moving over to the right a little bit with his driver and, you know, okay, so he moves off the ball a little bit. So what? He gets some weight moving over there. He's wider. He's taller. It's like you just get him reasonably over there. Now he's got to come back to the left. Like he's going to figure it out from there, isn't he? Like he's going to kind of, you know, but all of a sudden, like, I mean, he was dropping, right? I mean, his head was dropping in the backswing. He was hanging a little more left. Like from there with an iron and correct me if you disagree, but with an iron, like he can trap it. He can hit down and manage those things. But with the driver, that ball teed up, it was more problematic. And this taller in the backswing, and I go back to even like Bryson, I saw a video where they had this little, they drew some lines around his head and down his body, right? And you could see him just physically get taller, like move up out of it in the backswing. This this upward movement in the backswing, Chris, do you feel like through the years of your teaching has become more at the forefront, and maybe like the long drive guys have helped that come to be, that it's okay to feel like you're kind of up here, this elongation, versus say kind of stay down?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems to help a bit when it comes to creating club head speed to get a little taller going back. But you know, I don't think you're always optimizing for trying to hit it as far as you can. There's been plenty of guys who hit it really, really good and plenty far that lower in the backswing. So yeah, I just think it depends on what it is we're trying to go for with a particular player. If you know, we're, you know, putting more club head speed as a premium of what we're trying to do, then, you know, that might be something that we really kind of explore putting into their backswing. If that's not something, and I don't feel like getting taller is something that's going to naturally kind of help the other things we're trying to do, then like I wouldn't touch that. You know, with Tiger, I think it was less a function of, hey, how do we hit it farther? But just how do we have kind of more of this release at the bottom, a little bit less shaft lean at impact, and a slightly different sense of the shape of the swing overall. And with that came a kind of more upright setup, and just a little bit wider, kind of higher looking backswing.
Yeah.
So I with him, it wasn't, you know, within the context of trying to hit it farther. It was just, how did that fit the overall shape that we were going for, and what we were trying to get him to do through the ball? That would be a little bit different.
What was it? What was his attack angle before he came to you with his driver? Remember
when we first started working?
Yeah.
Right. Oh geez.
Down four.
Yeah. I mean, it was, the problem is that it, like, he would also have the tendency to hang back on it, which would get it back up.
So
there's a, you know, yes, if you were to kind of like, you know, do
what was
things.
It with an iron, like a seven iron, was it like nine?
Yeah, it was pretty down, but it's sort of a similar thing. I mean, I think that was part of, you know, when we were making the swing changes, it's like, okay, how do you move in a way that doesn't really hurt your back?
Right.
And, you know, he could put the, you know, create a lot of lean in the shaft, stay left, et cetera, and hit the ball really low and have a pretty down attack angle. But his eye, even with an iron, his eyes see a really high ball flight. I mean, that's, you know, he played arguably the best golf anybody's ever played ever, hitting it straight up in the air, just like really high, right? So there's still that instinct of trying to hit the ball higher. And then now if you do all these things of, you know, more lean, stay left, and your brain's like, I want to hit it higher, the tendency might be to hang back or try to figure something out to hit it higher, which will shell out the angle of attack, but it'll do it in a way that now potentially hurts your back because you're kind of hanging back through the ball. So, you know, yeah, he could easily have an angle of attack that was way down.
Yeah.
When we first started working, but he also, being kind of like this athlete who's going to create a ball flight that he wants to create, had ways to get the angle of attack less down. Now the question would be, are you getting it less down in a way that's actually good for your back? And that's kind of where we said, hey, look, you know, you're trying to make the angle of attack maybe be the same, but do it in a very different way.
It's just, I mean, obviously Tiger, in my opinion, Tiger, we saw the greatest run of golf ever. Certainly, is he the GOAT with Jack? Who knows? You can go back, but they're top. They're 1 and 1A. But I mean, the fact that when he come out and, you know, he's got the face a little shut at the top, and he's just, you know, high hands, and he's just, you know, explosive, and, you know, taking the world by storm, right, under Butch. And then he goes to Hank, and all of a sudden now he's rotating the shaft more, and the face is more open, and now he's softer through the zone, you know, with more release on the other side to protect the knee, and off he goes with Hank winning everything. And, yeah, and he comes back, and here he is, Sean. He goes stronger grip, hand path more in, like, you know, like you said, leaning a little bit, all this, tack angle steeper, and he gets the number one in the world. And then he comes back from all that, and he's broken. Now you help him put these pieces back together to get back to where he was. And here now he looks like this. And there's no question in my mind, Tiger would get back the number one in the world if he could walk and play every day again. Like, there's no question in my mind, you know, like, I mean, I know he's 47, but if he could put the reps in, walk, no pain, blah, 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 right? Like, he would just spin it back and start winning again. Like, I have no question in my mind that he would do that once again. It's just amazing. It's amazing to me, all the different patterns that he has had and been able to get to not only win, but win major championships, number one player in the world. It's hard to even comprehend. Like, I don't even, doesn't even make sense in my head, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a one in a, whatever it is. One in a billion.
One of him and Jack, right? Let's put it that way. But Jack didn't do all that. Jack didn't make all those.
Yeah. Just, I mean, he's incredible. I mean, it is incredible how he's gone through different versions of his swing. I mean, I think for golf in general, his swing in 2000, to me, it's probably it's probably the best ball striking from a practical standpoint. Like, you could say like Hogan or Trevino or whoever, but like in the modern era, hitting it far and high and having that much control, it's practically the best ball striking we've ever seen. Like, statistically, like, it just, you know, it's ridiculous, right? I just think, and then all the different versions he swung, I think his career is going to be an incredible case study in terms of just understanding golf and golf swings in general. And yeah, I mean, I agree. If he could walk and could practice every day, he's just different. I just think, I don't, he still has speed, right? Like, when you're in golf.
Yeah, he does. He's still got speed. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, in other sports, you know, what goes with, like, take the number away of age, what happens? You lose a step, you're a little bit slower, you can't jump as high. All these things happen to athletes that basically are their version of aging. And when you lose those things, you can't compete as well. You know, golf, the equivalent is what? It's probably speed, right? It's probably club head speed. So by that measure, he still, even through what his body's been through, he still hasn't, you know, he's lost, you know, some.
Right.
He's still very competitive. Like, he still has enough speed to be competitive. So I agree. In that way, he hasn't, you know, aged out of the window of being able to be competitive at that level. So,
yeah, but if he could walk, I mean, he has enough speed. I have no doubt he'll be top 20 iron player in the world. I'm not worried about that. And he'll make putts. He'll have his moments. I'm not even worried about it. Like, he's already mentally so much more beyond, and we know how important that is. So yeah, it's fascinating. All right, last thing, not to put you on the spot, but share something with Tiger that, like, what's the most amazing shot you've ever seen him hit? Was there like a moment, like, in practice where it was like, oh my god, like, what the hell was that? Was it like a series of shots in a term? Was there like a time where you just sat there and you're like, my god, I'm working with the most talented player to ever play the game?
I mean, there's a lot of, like, little things. You know, when he was, so there was one time pretty early on, he hit the shot with a driver off the deck and just hit this, like, massive cut around trees to put it, like, right up in front of a green, like, we're playing, like, over at Medalist or whatever. And it was just like, I hadn't even seen a ball flight that looked like that. Yeah. It was wild. It was just so different, right? And Trevor Immelman's talked about shots that he's seen him hit. They're just like, no one else can hit those. So there's that. And then, you know, when he was rebuilding his short game stuff, you know, he found sort of this groove when he was kind of working out of some stuff. And I remember watching him in his backyard and he started hitting these pitches, just these high spinners. That's just such a unique shot that I've only seen a handful of guys hit. So there's been enough times where I've seen him do things that you don't really see other people do. Mm-hmm. And I always find that fascinating because it's like, well, what is happening on those shots? So like a high spinner, for example, to me, that's, you know, Phil Mickelson hits that shot as well. It's a really unique shot that, you know, I'm with Ping and a guy named Derek Dominski over in Tucson, we're actually doing some research on this high spinner.
Okay.
So yeah. So to me, there's like these shots that I think are so interesting. That's like, okay, what's happening there that you don't really see other people doing? You know, he just had so many kind of moments like that where I was just like, what is that?
I'll never forget. And I'll finish with this is, and we're at the Players Championship. I guess when he was really struggling with his driver, and on 14, that hole, he hates that hole, right? The water left mogul. I mean, it's just optically a weird driving hole. And we're up the side there, you know, about, I don't know, 80 yards. And Tiger hits his driver and everybody's looking down the fairway and like, where'd that ball go? And no one could figure out where the ball went. Well, he popped it up. I don't even remember this, but he popped his drive straight up in the air. It came down the hill about 100 yards or so, 100 and something, rolled down the hill, didn't quite go in the water. So he's on this bank, side hill. I'm not kidding you. It's up, bank. Takes his 3-wood, grips it down damn near to the metal. Keep in mind, he probably just hit one of the most embarrassing shots that he probably has ever hit in his life, right? I mean, this is Tiger Woods. He popped his drive straight up in the air. And Chris, I told my wife this. I was like, you just saw probably one of the worst shots Tiger Woods ever hit, followed by one of the most amazing shots I've ever seen anybody ever hit in my entire life. And he ripped that through it off that side hill live, and he hit it. And I remember, I saw it. It was like just head high. A freaking missile that ran up, almost got up to the green. Remember, it ran up to the front and then came back down. I was like, I'm out. That's stupid. That shot right there. I mean, popped his drive up, three wood down to the neck, balls up their chest height. I mean, and it wasn't like, Chris, it wasn't like this little bunt. Like, he wasn't bunting it down there to get his. I mean, he was trying to hit it on the damn green. I mean, full on, pow, three wood divot, shaft forward. It's awesome, man.
That's crazy.
It's just awesome. He's one of a kind. Man, I can't thank you enough. This was, we covered some ground. So I always appreciate these little 6 month checkups, picking your brain on these things. And I'll see you. I know you're back PGA show. You guys are doing your summit again.
Yeah.
So I know I have a lot of teachers that follow the podcast. You guys are back at the Rosen.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It'll be fun to get back in. You know, we're going to do some stuff on speed. We might do some stuff on repeatability. I think repeatability is, like, to me, the most interesting subject in golf instruction right now. I think that's that's the next sort of thing to dig into is where does shot repeatability come from? And you know, I have a couple of things that I'm like looking at, and there's, I think, a couple of different buckets you can put that into. But to me, that's the million-dollar question in golf is, like, you know, why do you have a five handicap who's got, you know, good club head speed and they can hit a shot right down the middle, a driver down the middle, and they'll look like a tour guy, but then the next one is, you know, whatever, not good, right? So it's all about that shot repeatability and where does that come from? You know, everybody always, it's funny because people will, like, you know, when they get lessons, they're like, oh, I want to hit it farther. I want more consistency. And they act like consistency is like this, like, super easy thing. It's like, no, that's the defining aspect of being a really great golfer. So, you know, I think that's an interesting subject. I think we might do some stuff on that. So we're still putting it all together though.
Awesome, man. Well, I look forward to attending and seeing you all there.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks,
all right,
Travis.
Chris Cole, thanks so much, man. Join the pod.
PXG has done it again with the launch of a new lineup of drivers, fairways, hybrids, and irons. The new Gen 5 golf clubs deliver significantly increased MOI, faster ball speeds, longer distances, and tighter dispersions, all coupled what the exceptional feel and sound golfers have come to expect from PXG. Schedule your custom fitting or buy online at pxg.com.